Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I will remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the University of Maryland Transplant Program. Nearly 2,000 Marylanders are waiting for an organ transplant. The University of Maryland conducts research and performs procedures designed to optimize transplant rates and provide least invasive surgeries for organ donors. More information about the University of Maryland's transplant program and becoming an organ donor is available at umm.edu/transplant. We are joined here today, Tom Schaller is with us once again, Associate Professor of Political Science at UMBC, political writer for the Baltimore Sun, Salon, author of Whistling Past Dixie. Corey McCrae is in the studio. He's co-founder of the Best Democratic Club and former president of the
Young Trade Unionists.
Young Trade Unionists. How could I forget that? Young Trade Unionists. Ann McCarthy is with us. She's dean of the business school at Hamline University in Minneapolis, former Republican candidate for controller of Maryland, and was a guest on the show many times when she was the assistant dean at Johns Hopkins School of Business. Hassan Giordano is with us, host of Reporters Roundtable, writer for the Baltimore Independent Examiner. Folks, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Thanks for having me.
410-319-8888 is the number to call. Join in on this conversation. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. 410-319-8888. All right, let's just start. I just curious, go around the room here. Let me start with you, Tom Schaller. It's good to have you with us. Always good to have you with us.
Good to be here, Mark.
I'm just curious what you think. And then we all may have two or three, but what do you think is the most significant story, politically and socially, of the year that occurred?
Well, I think the jury's out still on the Newtown massacre from last week, and I think given its lateness in the year and the fact that it will, I think, end up being the big story of the year, sort of, it'll probably have more bearing on 2013 politically, but since it happened in 2012, I think it'll be in the certainly the top two or three stories. And, of course, Obama's reelection and the way he won and the types of voters who helped reelect him and the 2012 presidential campaign, I think, is a big story. And then also politically, I suppose, both here in Maryland and in the other three states, the gay marriage referenda going 0-34 until this November going 4-0 is, I think, going to be looked back upon as a key moment, a tipping point moment for the gay marriage movement.
All right, I'm going to come back. I'm going to hear all of your ideas. I'm going to come back and kind of wrestle with all of them kind of in a deeper way, but just running through them first. Hassan, why don't you go next? Hassan Giordano.
First and foremost, probably media. Mark Steiner being on the air for 20 years is monumental. That's why we were.
Can I amend my list, Mark?
Sure. Seriously, you know, it honored us, me and GCOM Media and Impact, to award you earlier this year at our breakfast, and it means a lot because you've really been doing it, as you said, with a phone, one mic, in a room. To where you are today, it means a lot, for especially in journalists like myself, independent of the mainstream journalism that has a voice outside of the mainstream. It doesn't go along to get along. So that
I appreciate that.
He mentioned the gay marriage. I think that was, even though I wasn't in support of it personally, everything kind of happens in time and depending on the swing of things, and so for 30-some-odd states to reject it, and then all of a sudden, in one swoop, four states approve it, I think just showed a momentum. And even in Maryland, with the DREAM Act being passed as well, you can say what you want about the liberal stronghold here in Maryland. It's still a very conservative electorate, so I really didn't think both of those would pass throughout the state. And they did. And so all of them did, including gambling. And that's another one. Expanding gambling will be something we're going to have to watch. And, you know, our job's going to actually come to the residents of Baltimore and Prince George's and those jurisdictions. So a lot of me politically, I think one of the biggest ones that is still ongoing is something that a lot of the mass media, especially the African-American media, has not picked up on. I think it does is the Tiffany Austin convictions that resulted in her still being really under the Constitution allowed to still be in office in Prince George's, but the Attorney General declaring her unable or unfit to come back into office. And then the person that the Prince George's County elected state Democratic State Central Committee appoints a person that they want to serve in that office and replace her, and the governor weighs in, which is, again, against the Maryland state constitution, and they reject his bid now because of a 21-year-old misdemeanor. And I think that plays to the mindset of many, especially in the African-American community, that says that the politics of either party, but the Democratic Party, especially in Maryland, does not serve their interests. And I think that in and of itself speaks to just that. But it just baffles me how mainstream media has not really picked up on that.
Let me turn to Anne McCarthy.
Okay, so I would agree about President Obama's reelection. I think that given that the economy was seemingly still faltering and consumer confidence was low, to reelect an incumbent president is unusual, and it's a testimony to his and his campaign's ability to, you know, grassroots organize. And my second one is the fact that two states have legalized marijuana for recreational use as opposed to medical use, and mm-hmm. I think that's the beginning of something we'll see increasingly in the next coming years. And then finally, of course, you know, Newton, Shady Hook, what happened there, and we're all looking at that, and it's all heartbreaking, but it caps off a year of violence. The mall in Wisconsin, the theater in Aurora, Colorado, and the workplace shooting in Minneapolis, four major active shooter mass killings in a year, is, I think, just has turned our attention, with 6 and 7 year olds now being massacred, to we have to do something about this.
Coy McCray.
I guess I would start off with definitely the election of President Obama. That was pretty big. The derecho, I wanted to say the derecho hit me pretty big, me being out of power for 7 days. You know, it's something that I will reflect on, and I'm not sure if that will happen in my lifetime again, but that was pretty...
My guess, I would bet that it would, but go ahead. And it will.
And I wanted to go back to Connecticut, and as she stated, the mass shootings that happened over this year, and just the formation of the Best Democratic Club. You know, I think that we actually got off politically in Baltimore City to a very good start, and I think it's a lot to come for the years to come.
But and folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. Interesting, nobody raised the issue of Sandy and the role that played in terms of the environment and our politics, but maybe we'll get to that, maybe we won't. But let's start with Newtown for a second and what we think. And Tom, you raised it first. I mean, you went first, but you raised it first, and everybody kind of touched on it. I mean, and politically, and you were kind of alluding to what you think the politics will be of Newtown come January. And talk a bit about what you think is going to happen and where how the ground may have shifted, and what do you think could happen in Congress?
Well, I think you're talking to me, Mark?
Yeah, I am. Yes.
Yeah,
Tom.
Oh, sorry. Well, I think the assault weapons ban has a pretty good chance of coming back now after it had expired following being in effect for 10 years. And when you see, you know, pro-gun Democratic senators like Mark Warner and Joe Manchin from very, you know, gun-favorable states and higher NRA states like, you know, West Virginia and Virginia, when they start to move, that's a pretty good sign. And unfortunately, we see that the weapon sales are going through the roof right now because everybody's anticipating stricter gun laws starting at some point, probably in 2013. And so before they can change the laws, people are going out in record numbers, as is reported in a variety of places today. So who knows? We have 300 million guns in a country of a little over 300 million people. There'll still be plenty of guns out there, and I don't know that in the end it's going to solve anything, but, you know, politicians do respond to public will, and when 20 kids are killed, the politicians are going to do something.
And, you know, and we spoke about this before we came on, it was such a reactionary country, and especially government, it kills me that, you know, we have the governor on the front page saying, I think we have too many guns, it's time for a change. Like, you didn't think that before this tragedy happened? Not to mention we have innocent children being killed in Afghanistan and other countries by these bombs that we are putting over there, but we don't identify that as being a tragedy as we do here in Connecticut. I think just the society in and of itself, we have to stop being reactionary and putting these measures in place. These measures should have been in place. Like you said, it expired in 2004. They should have never expired. My six-year-old son, as soon as he heard about it in school, they actually taught this the next day in schools. In Baltimore, I kept them away from the news.
They talked what?
They talked about it Monday and went they actually raised this to the kids. I kind of got upset about that because I kept them from that news because I didn't even want to deal with it. That's a very heartfelt thing. And so what they did was they asked them about how they felt about what happened and of the kids being killed in Connecticut. And a lot of these kids didn't even know about it because their parents may have either kept them from the news or they just weren't watching it. So they dealt with that, and he knew about it. So we had a conversation about it. And when he saw the president on TV today and they showed a picture of these gun stores, he boos. He's 6 years old. They need to shut all those stores down, Daddy. We don't need guns. A six-year-old can tell you that, but obviously Congress can't. That, to me, speaks volumes to the governmental system that we have in America and across this country. I mean, across this world, really.
And?
Well, the issue here is this is the first time the NRA has actually come out with a statement that shows that they're willing to consider talking about perhaps common ground or that they don't have such a hard stance. And the NRA has never done that. And I also think, you know, every life is precious, but I lived in Colorado when Columbine happened, and it was devastating to those of us. My sister lived in that neighborhood, and it's tough, but and I don't mean to say that one life is more important than the other, but teenagers, you kind of get the feeling that they can fight back or they know how to run or they can hide or, you know, that they're older and they can think and react. Six-year-olds don't know what's happening to them. They're just little babies almost. And I think that the fact that they were six-year-olds and there are 20 of them and the teachers gave their lives and the principal and the school psychologist tried to stop this man, I think this has shocked us in a way that no other gun violence this year or in the previous 10 years has. And I think it's good for us. We need to wake up.
We need to attack mental health, though, before we attack these guns. And, I mean, we had a mother just charged a week ago in Baltimore City for slitting her own two-year-old's infant's throat, and a father who killed his infant 3 weeks before that. There's a mental health issue, not only in this case in Connecticut, but especially in the African-American communities and communities all across this country, not just the African-American community, that we have not begun to tackle. It's easy to attack the guns, but it's a lot harder to really attack the mental health issues of a lot of people in this country.
Let me raise a couple of things about this before we move on. We'll open the phones here. One of the things that hit me, we've done several conversations about what happened in Newtown from a number of different perspectives, about both philosophically, what's at the root of what's happening with America, gun control, issues of race that are involved in this. And when that was brought up, then one of the things we talked about was that you had in one day in Chicago, and this is not a mass murder, but you had one day in Chicago, more people killed in one day than were killed in all year in Afghanistan and Iraq in the war. Yeah. Many of those kids, I forget the exact percentage, but a large percentage of those were young people, between the ages of 14 and 20-something, young people. Mm-hmm. But that didn't raise the call to ban guns.
Right.
When the tragedy happened, I'm still kind of in shock by the killing of these kids in Newtown. That idea of these little children being mowed down. And as a father, you can imagine those things you're saying in the back of your head all the time when you have a kid, what would happen if to my child? So that stuff is always wrestling in your heads. When that happens, like, puts it right in your face. But we didn't talk about the gun thing until that. And we talk about the psychopathology of the killers, of these mass killers. But we don't talk about the psychopathology of individual killers. Most people who are killed by hand, I forget the stat, and I might have this wrong, so I'll have to look it up again. But 15% of the population of America is African American. 47% of the killings by guns are of African Americans. Not necessarily always by African Americans, but of African Americans. And so these are very real things. So now that this has happened, because I think, and I don't mean to sound this in a kind of disrespectful way, but that politicians who are in Congress see young kids who remind them of their kids, then it's time to talk about it.
Actually, Mark, I hear what you're saying. I've been reflecting on this. To me, it's more, the parallel is that more people die on the roads in car accidents every year, and yet we don't talk about that. But if a plane goes down and kills, 100 people, we talk about that. And I think it's the magnitude that, we don't we can't get our heads around the daily occurrence that of the killing that goes on, which is awful, and I think we do need to talk about it, that might be contributed to with, you know, gang violence or domestic violence or random shootings or accidental shootings. All of those have a myriad of, like, causes, but there is no, I just can't understand, even under the Second Amendment, I don't see how there's a right for somebody to have an assault rifle that is of no use for a hunter or anyone else other than to kill people, usually in war. And why we let people buy those things in a civilized society is beyond me.
True. But to regulate handguns, I mean, look, you said about the African Americans, a high percentage are guns, even here in the city of Baltimore. I guarantee 80-90%, if not more, are not legal guns. So you can't regulate illegal guns. I mean, how do you attack that, Corey? I mean,
I misspoke, and then we'll go to Tom Schaller. It wasn't in one day. I'm sorry, I misspoke. It was in the first half of 2012. More people were killed in the streets of Chicago than were killed all year in Afghanistan and during the war. So I want to make sure I had that right, Tom.
Well, a lot of points have been made here, and I agree with some of them. I mean, 1,000 people die a day from the effects of smoking, but we did do something about that, and far more people died in automobile accidents and would have died if we didn't do things like have seat belts and require safety equipment on automobiles. So, you know, can we improve highway safety? Sure. Can we maybe improve, you know, health with respect to smoking? Sure. We can look at the fatalities, but what we often don't count are the saved fatalities. And maybe some of the gun laws as they exist have prevented some fatalities. I'm sure it's impossible that that's not the case. But, you know, we should move in the direction toward trying to reduce the number. Of course, we're just a very violent society. You know, physical violence and domestic violence crimes, we have very high rates, whether guns are involved or not. And I'm, you know, I'm generally disinclined to believe or follow any kind of recommendation of politicians like Joe Lieberman, especially on his way out of the Senate door. But, you know, he's probably my least favorite politician in Washington over the last 20 years, but other than George Bush. But, you know, I think Lieberman is right. I mean, there is, I don't think it's video games and so forth, but, you know, there are deeper forces at work that lend themselves to violence. And even though overall violent crime rates are down over the last 10 or 20 years, we're still well above, you know, peer nations and other industrialized parts of the world.
If we start with the assault rifles, I hear what we're saying all. I think we're mostly in agreement about handguns. But if we, it's sort of like, don't let the handgun issue get in the way of the assault rifle issue. Let's start with the assault rifle issue. Let's get some movement from the NRA and all those congressmen that are supported by the NRA. And then check that one off, get that one done, and then move on to the next issue, which might be handguns and handgun safety and buying guns at gun shows instead of without background checks, and get that done. I mean, it's sort of like, let's start with what we can get done and keep on going.
Now, I do want to get to the phones here, but go ahead and jump in, Corey.
And I just wanted to say, you know, one of the things that I heard mentioned once by Ms. Ann was the NRA. They're the problem in this equation, and that as we do address, I do believe that we should take steps. And she stated in reference to the rifles, in reference to mental health, as Hassan was mentioning. But I think that the NRA, which they see that their back's up against the wall, and they're the ones that stop the politicians from having a political will and a political courage to do what they're supposed to do. As Hassan stated, I also have two young girls, and my five-year-old, we had to have that conversation with. The three-year-old may not have known what was going on, but she did state that she was sad for what happened to those kids, you know, that their parents are probably really sad, you know, but it's a shame that we have to have that conversation with our young children at this time. And we need to do something about it, and right now is the time to do something about it.
Let's go to the phones here. I'm going to get some people in the air, and then we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about some of the other issues we've raised. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Chris. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hey, good evening, Mark.
Good evening, Chris.
I'm not going to take up a bunch of your time. I just want to clarify what I was saying last night. It's not about who can possess guns. The conversation shouldn't start from assault rifles or handguns. How about the equally respecting life? Okay, if all life is valuable, let's start from there. And because it, not to diminish, this was terrible what happened to these kids, but this has been happening for a long time. it seems like just like we can point out each time this tragedy has happened in different places, and yet in between each tragedy, it's going on a daily basis, and it doesn't get the same amount of attention. So we're not valuing life equally. We value life equally. People won't be able to slip through the cracks. This is a bigger conversation that's not being held about equally respecting life and making all life valuable. And then we can say, okay, well, we need to really look at why guns are necessary. And I'm not an opponent or proponent. I'm just saying start there. There's a bigger how the Second Amendment came about. It was not an inclusive right. The right was had already. Why did people who had guns, at no time did the government say they were coming into homes to take guns? So why give a right that was held already? It was an exclusive right to keep freed slaves and Native Americans from having. So when you go on and then before abolishing slavery, they institute this felon tag. And there's a lot of things that's not being talked about. It's not about guns per se. And this is how people with mental issues and other people who shouldn't have guns slip in through the cracks, because there are still a lot of people allowed to have guns. This is a bigger conversation about valuing all life and who's trying to, you know, hold power. It's frustrating.
Chris, I hear you, and I appreciate the thoughts. And I think that I think in some ways it is a bigger conversation about America. I mean, we can wrestle around the idea of guns, and I think that the whole semi-automatic weapons being sold, you know, just a point of clarification, the semi-automatic weapons are not really assault weapons. They're not Army, military, Marine weapons. These are weapons that don't shoot the same way, but they're still very dangerous weapons, obviously, that you can clip off around very quickly, but they're not automatic weapons or assault weapons. But the real issue here is, I think one of the things that Chris is talking about is kind of wrestling with the heart of what we are in America. I think that's the conversation. You know, whether we're talking about this, and we left out Trayvon Martin. I mean, Trayvon Martin, his murder began the conversation but didn't set it up deep enough, as this conversation is doing. But those two bookends for our country this year in terms of murders say a lot about where we are. Anne, I heard you. Were you saying something?
No, I was agreeing. Well, I'll give you an example. Locally, we have a man who's going to jail for having shot in his own home two teenagers that were breaking in into his home at night. And on the other hand, we have a Somali family that's sort of right now being the children are in custody because the 4-year-old found the father's gun and shot the 2-year-old and killed him. And yet the Somali dad thought he was protecting his family at some level. They were refugees. They came from a violent, you know, sort of region of the world. And he felt for the safety of his own family, he was doing the best for them by having a gun at home and just didn't sort of follow safe gun practices, even though, you know what I mean? It's like a lot of these individual tragedies are individual tragedies for different reasons. And we have to get at the conversation about how do we understand how these different, what kind of results or what kind of solutions we can get at.
And in Baltimore, we have 13 officer-related homicides this year, all open, none of them been charged criminally, including Anthony Anderson that was ruled a homicide by the medical examiner's office. No charges have been brought forth on these officers yet. But I think Mike Huckabee really made an interest in, and this is a whole other show, is removing God from the schools.
Yeah, I think that when he said that made me grateful he didn't become President of the United States of America.
But it's an interesting conversation, though, because there is no spirituality in this younger generation.
I don't know if that's –
I'm telling you. It's.
I don't think
that's
true.
If you look at a good majority of the – it's not being taught in schools, and that's fine.
Shouldn't
be. I understand people have different influences. But honestly,
send your child to Baltimore Catholic City, school, Corey, or send them to Hebrew Corey, school, or whatever you want. But
when
you know.
We talk about Corey, honestly, Baltimore City and this younger generation of teenagers, do you see a level of spirituality in the majority of them?
I want to say when my grandmother was coming up, no, has it decreased to a certain degree? I would agree.
No respect at all for their elders or anything, man. That has to be taught, and it's not being taught at the homes.
A majority, I wouldn't, you know, but has it decreased from what it was? I would say yes.
We have to take a break. We have a lot of callers. I want to kind of switch gears and talk about Obama's election and talk about what that means for the future now and what it might mean, it was going to mean for the next 4 years and for the political moves in this country. We'll spend a few minutes on that. 410-319-8888. We'll be right back with our guests. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I'm here with Hasan Giordano, host of Reporters Roundtable, writer in the Baltimore Examiner, the Baltimore Independent Examiner column, Anne McCarthy, dean of the business school at Hamline University in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Tom Schaller, associate professor of political science at UMBC, political writer for the Baltimore Sun and Salon, and author of the book Whistling Past Dixie, Corey McCrae, founder of the Best Democratic Club, as a new Democratic club that is taking on the establishment, and one of our young union leaders in town as well. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join in on this conversation. Are you going to go to the phones here? Let's switch gears for a minute, because I think that as you raised, Tom, first, the election of Barack Obama is a major event. We're seeing today that Barack Obama, there's some talk around, especially progressive Democratic circles and some others about his agreements with the Republicans to slash Social Security. So I was going to, which will raise a lot of political issues. So, and given, talk about what you where you see America going politically with that, and what the statement might have said about his election that may be different than the reality that America is going to face under his second term.
Well, I still think most of the second term will be like almost every other presidential second term, which is an incremental, you know, defense of first term policies. I don't think we're going to see a major shift other than maybe on the gun issue, which wouldn't have happened without Newtown.
Right.
You know, Obama's agreeing to let the cost of living raises shrink, which is not the same as cutting it, but cuts it against what the current baseline is. I mean, I don't think that's going to play too well with his liberal base. It'll certainly play well with some centrists. It's not going to play very well with seniors. The seniors voted, you know, for both Romney and McCain over Obama, so maybe that's a constituency Obama can afford to lose. You know, what's interesting there is that, you know, Republicans are the same people who have been saying for years that Obamacare is, you know, giving money to younger, less white generations at the expense of Medicare, and now they're the ones that are advocating for entitlement, you know, restraints on Medicare and Social Security. So I can never really understand where the Republican Party stands on these issues. But, you know, I think we'll get increases on taxes on people over at least 250, maybe 400,000, if Obama keeps that bargaining chip on the table, and certainly for people over a million. And, you know, we need those revenues. To me, the real disappointing thing of the last, not just 4 years, but the last 12 years, is that we really don't have any conversation about the revenue side of the deficit equation. We only talk about the spending side, but revenues are at a 60-year low and have been below 15% of GDP the last 3 years.
Right.
That's really, really historically low, and we never talk about that, or we don't talk about it much.
It's going to be interesting to see. I think the real Barack Obama should show up in the second term.
But what does that mean? Who's the real Barack Obama?
I think we've seen
the real Barack Obama.
I don't think we have.
Who we have?
I honestly don't think. Obviously, the first term, you're running for re-election. But as Tom said, he's only going to get 2 years to really get what he needs done. I think it'll be a test over the next 6 months. I think he gave way in Susan Rice and allowing her to come out and then say, you know, I'm going to take it. And I think that was a very smart move. I don't think that was a fight that he should have took on. People say he was weak on it. I don't believe it. I think that was really showing his test of leadership. But to get beyond this, to see if he can get guns through, see how he negotiates with Republicans and see who comes out on the winning side, and if he can get comprehensive immigration reform all in the next 6 months to a year, it'll be a test, because it's funny. He doesn't need the liberals, and he's never been a liberal Democrat. That's why I didn't understand how they celebrated him so much, came out for him, but he's never been that. And so it's going to be interesting to see how much he does for the next Democratic nominee in 2016, and if he actually plays the role for the party or just plays the role for Obama.
Ann?
So I would like to see immigration reform. I think all of us would. But I think and that's not easy, but I think that there's more coalition around that. I think the tough thing that really needs to happen is tax reform, because even if we tax millionaires more, I have to tell you, Mitt Romney's still going to hide his money in Swiss bank accounts. It's we need a tax change so that people who can afford the best of the accountants and tax lawyers can hide their money in offshore accounts and only pay 13% tax rate. That fundamentally needs to change because wealthy people will always be able to shelter their income. That leaves the upper middle class and the middle class bearing the brunt of any tax increase, which is not, I think, is good for our economy. I do agree that revenues have to increase. And then I have something I want to throw into the mix about his next term.
All right, go ahead, please.
I think that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, he needs to look at the Supreme Court, and I don't know where she's at in terms of her health, but there's no guarantee that a Democrat will be elected in 4 years. And if a Democrat's not reelected and she steps down, she waits 4 years to step down, then they've given a Republican another chance to swing that court even further to the right, and that's on no one's radar.
Interesting. Oh, Ann, you sound like, have you switched parties?
No. I'm trying to get my party back to the reasonable party.
Thank you.
We have two middle road Republicans in the room here. This is good. This is a good change of pace.
I think that we should all keep a look at the election that just took pass, the differences in those elections and past elections in reference to his grassroots opportunities. I think that there's a lot that we can learn in local races and state races and on a federal level. I think that we had a lot of missed opportunity. Well, Mitt Romney had a lot of missed opportunity because he didn't take a couple pages out of Barack Obama's grassroots election cycle. And then also I think that we're seeing a Barack Obama that's going to come out, and especially in this argument or debate about the fiscal cliff. I think that he's setting the tone at this point, and hopefully we will see the real Barack Obama, or the Barack Obama that I would like to see. One of the things that I will be interested in, being a union leader, I would like to see labor law reform. We didn't get past the Employee Free Choice Act because health care took precedent, but we should look at some type of minor changes or some type of changes in reference to speeding up the process to when a bargaining unit or employees would like to join a union, more penalties, heavier penalties or stiffer penalties, because companies can easily get away with committing the charges without being really penalized or worth it not to penalize. So that's a conversation that I would like to see.
So, Tom, I'd like to, before we go back to the phones here, we're going to go right here to this comment from you that I'm curious, as you know, you have often a very progressive but straight ahead kind of analysis of politics and the things that you write, kind of a hard and kind of clear look at how things happen for the most part. And I mean, this coalition that put Barack Obama into office, this coalition that was made up of in some states, union workers, the majority of the white middle-aged voters who voted for Barack Obama were union households, young white voters, all these communities of color that went overwhelmingly for Barack Obama. I mean, if you put them politically any place, at least on social economic policy, on economic policy in particular, they'd be more towards the progressive end of the spectrum, whatever that means. So I'm curious, what does that portend? I mean, if you have states that are run by Republicans, which means the districts are then kind of Every governor gerrymands with a Republican or Democrat, but gerrymands a district to elect more Republican congressmen, even if it's much closer than that. I mean, what does that portend for the future? I mean, with how Barack Obama may or may not compromise on what people think he shouldn't compromise on. I know I've said a lot there, but...
Well, I mean, one of the things that I'm looking at right now in the book that I'm working on and a piece I'm writing right now, a shorter piece, is that, you know, this ability to translate this new quote-unquote rising electorate, or the Obama surge electorate of younger, you know, less affluent, not more non-white voters, a little bit heavily tilted toward female voters. That that translates pretty easily, as we've seen the last two elections at the presidential level. But what it doesn't translate as dramatically is in midterm cycles. And most of the governors are elected in non-presidential years. I think only 10 of the 50 governors are elected simultaneous with the president. The other 40 are elected in either odd-numbered years. There's six states that do that, and the balance that elect them in the midterm cycles, even-numbered years that are non-presidential years. And then a lot of the state legislative seats are elected in non-presidential years, all of them here in Maryland, for example. Michigan, you look at the puzzle of that. There's a state that Obama won pretty comfortably in 2008 and again in 2012, but the governor was elected in 2010. Why? The turnout is about 60% in Michigan. I'm looking at this right now. 57% of the turnout in a midterm election, using 100% as the baseline in a presidential election. And all of the Michigan senators are elected in non-presidential years. So, you know, the Republicans have dominated the Senate there because none of them have to stand for re-election at any time when the presidency is on the ballot. Now, the House members do go up every 2 years, so every other election is a presidential election. So the ability to bring those voters to the polls in non-presidential years is really the long-term task of the Democratic National Committee and the Democratic State Legislative Committee and the Democratic, you know, Hill committees that elect House and Senate members. And that, I think, is the big stumbling block or hurdle for Democrats in trying to really affect a true Obama-style transformation of the electoral system. And I don't know how they're going to do that.
And the question is, can the conservative right-wing part of the Republican Party tone down its rhetoric enough to get some of those? I mean, there's people on Facebook, you know, President Obama was just named Man of the Year, Times Man of the Year.
I saw that.
They were already referring to him as Adolf Hitler getting it, and, you know, he's the last person that should get this. And it just went off. And these were, when they used to live in Maryland, they were at least moderate. Now, all of a sudden, they move out of state, and they're these right-wing conservatives, and it's, you know, how do you win that? And that's their thing. Oh, he only won because of blacks and Latinos. Well, no, that's not the only people who voted for him.
Women.
Exactly. And I just don't think that there's, you know, enough ands out there that can understand that and say, you know what? We need these bases. We need Latinos. We need blacks. We need Asian Pacific Americans who came out tremendously for Democrats, but who are more conservative. But as long as you have people out there saying that type of stuff, it just turns people off.
It does. I agree. And yet, look at the number of the young Republican governors. I mean, Fernandez in New Mexico, Nikki Haley in South Carolina, Bobby Jindal. Nikki Haley just appointed Tim Scott, the first African-American senator to be appointed in a long time in the South.
And the only one up there now.
So, yeah.
That's
true.
Yeah,
but this is the problem, is that the Republicans are good at nominating and even electing, or in the case of Haley, appointing non-white elites who are public officials, but that doesn't mean that their issue set is translating to the voters. And so it's kind of like the icing is getting a little less white, but the cake is pretty white.
That's a good point. Michael Steele, 2002. They set the bar, though. They had to bring Anthony Brown in 2006, but he's correct. They don't know how to get into Prince George's County of Baltimore City and relay that message. I don't understand why they just
because their message is not one of a progressive economic agenda, which most people of color and most working people, even if they're socially conservative, are for. It's
political. Disagree with that. I disagree.
Well,
I think a lot of people in our communities can connect. I think the messenger has been the wrong one. You have a Dan Bongino came to our thing the other night, our toy drive, and connected with people like Carl Stokes and Democrats that were in the room.
He would not connect in an election.
I was going to say he didn't connect
what?
With me.
He didn't connect with you.
I told you that.
nor with me. A nice guy. But Tom, shout out what were you saying, and then we'll go to the phones.
Well, I mean, you know, it doesn't just matter who the vessel is, but, you know, if it was just a vessel and just superficial or sociological representation is all that mattered, then women should have flocked to the Palin ticket in 2008. So it's not just enough to have minorities and women running for office. They have to be saying the right things, and they have to be not just saying the right things, but actually have a record of supporting things that matter to beyond the sort of white male, plutocratic, corporate, you know, socially conservative, older base that the Republicans are dominating to the exclusion of pretty much everybody else. And so, you know, a dirty glass full of sewage and a clean glass full of sewage is still a glass of sewage.
410-319-8888, your thoughts. We've arranged for a couple of very important subjects for this year. We'll, by the way, after the first of the year, we're going to come back with a series of conversations with some of these guests and other guests talking about the year to come and what went behind us with philosophers, theologians, politicians, journalists, citizen activists to kind of do roundtables. And we'd like to hear your thoughts at 410-319-8888. Let's go to our calls. I know some of you left. We're waiting to get on. I apologize for that. But we have some guests here who have a lot to say. And Jaleel, you're on the air.
Hey, greetings. Good evening. How's everybody?
Very well. Welcome, Jaleel.
Listen, for those of us who have been around, who are older, Well, especially those of us from the 60s.
That would be me.
From the 60s. People seem to forget their history. And the panel here does a disservice to Black, Latino, all people of color, Native Americans, about the history of gun laws and the origin. Your caller, a couple back, made it very clear, and he was historically correct. But I'm not even going to go back that far. Nobody here has mentioned the 1989 shooting of 34 children and the teacher in California. So the historical memory and the media did not bring up the fact that China just had 22 children killed outside the door of their school.
Well, they were stabbed. They weren't killed. 22 kids were just stabbed in China this last week, but they
right.
weren't killed. Yeah.
Children before they got inside the school. So historically, the ban in 1980, the Congress, when they started that ban, was based upon in Stockton, California, the drifter in 1989. He shot up at the McDonald's, killed 34 children and one teacher. And many of the people at that McDonald's that day happened to be many Vietnamese children. Not a word in this entire conversation or on the media, nothing, the historical memory has gone lapse. And it's not the worst tragedy we had with our children in school was out in the Midwest when a guy strapped the elementary school with dynamite and blew the school up. So it's not the gun control issue. It's predominantly culture. And, you know, the historical consciousness, people just trample all over that. And what you do is we insult history of knowing what the historical record is. And so please do your reading and research. That even that guy who killed those children, 34, in Stockton, he had a rifle, automatic. He had a rifle. It was single shot. So it's not the gun issue. But you could always go to history and find these issues on a local and a national basis. But people just every day in the media, I've been looking for it, paying attention, they just trample over the historical document of the previous things that have gone wrong. So we need to be doing our research.
I appreciate Jill. Thank you so much. Go ahead, Ann.
I agree about history, but it was 5 children that were killed in Stockton in 1989, and it was 21 people who were killed in 1984 at the McDonald's. So, and that did lead to, because California at the time had the strictest gun laws, and the question was, how could this happen in California if they have such strict gun laws? And that's what led, in some part, to the ban on assault rifles. But he's right. We do forget our history, and we should pay better attention to it. I totally agree with that.
Thank you, Ann. And we still have an open comptroller seat if you want. I know Peter Franchella, but we're laying the framework for you.
She's happy in Minnesota.
I'm telling you, it is so cold up here, I would be happy to come back to Maryland. Cold, dark, and lots of snow. But I want to put something else on everybody's radar.
Go ahead.
I know this is near and dear to Mark's heart, and I am not an expert on this, and maybe you could do a future show on this with some health insurance experts, but you've got all these Republican governors refusing to set up state-run health exchanges, which leaves it to the federal government, and I'm just wondering if an unintended consequence of this is that we'll end up with a national health care system.
Well, I can only hope.
But I know. I told you it was near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, that's a story in and of itself.
I think this will be a very telling year in how the health care plan begins to be implemented in over the next 2 years and what it will really do or not do. I mean, I know that there are a lot of issues in the healthcare system. I mean, for just personally, our small business with our few employees, the healthcare bill has done nothing to assist us. It's cost us a ton more money.
Center for Emerging Media?
Yeah.
Who they need to donate to now before tax contributions get taken out.
Thank you.
So we can make the tax deductible.
Thank you. Sounds like we can pay for our employees' health care, and which we do. I mean, I think that as a friend of mine I ran to last night who owns a wine store in town in Hamden, and the Wine Source, he has his 20-some employees. He pays health care for his employees. He said his line is, liberal Democrats can run businesses and take care of their employees. So, but I think that the health care is like, we'll see what it does in terms of what it does to businesses who are trying to take care of the people who work for them. I think that's going to be part of it. I think that because this bill has done at least, I don't think Tom has done anything really to deal with the question of costs in our healthcare system at all. Those are just going to keep rising.
I agree. Well, I mean, are we going to get into a whole debate about Obamacare now? Or
we don't have to. No, I'm just throwing it out. We don't have time for a whole debate. But
okay.
But I was going to throw that out there.
But if you could bring on somebody who's a little more expert in these healthcare.
No, we will do that. That's on our radar for the beginning of the year, for sure.
Yeah, I would be very curious as to what they think about that. The governor's refusing to set them up and, you know, basically allowing the federal government to come in and do it.
And one thing I forgot I want to quickly amend is definitely what happened with the ballot initiative reforms that were started this year, really started last year, but really took off this year. We saw in the elections with Delegate Neil Parrott and the MarylandPetitions.com that led to gay marriage, the DREAM Act, and congressional redistricting on the ballot this year. We haven't seen that really in that type of magnitude since its inception in 1914. And so even though they all failed, they did get the signatures needed to put them on. So where that leads us in Maryland over the next couple years, whether the GOP will continue that pattern or not, based off the failure that they saw at the polls, will be telling as well.
Let's go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Paul in Parkville, you're on the air.
Hey, first-time caller. Just actually discovered your station driving down the road.
Oh, great. Well, welcome.
Just had a quick question. Everybody wants to talk all of a sudden, you know, about tougher gun laws. I guess my point is that gun laws really don't stop criminals from obtaining guns. You know, it's kind of, it doesn't seem to be the answer to the problem, in my estimation, with regards to these tragedies that keep happening. You know, we don't want to take into account or take a look at the real problem, which you guys have been talking about the past few days, which is, you know, the mental stability or instability of these people that are committing these heinous crimes. You know, these gun laws, if a criminal wants to get a gun, he's going to get a gun. He's going to use this gun to commit a crime. He's going to commit a heinous crime if he's going out there to try to hurt, maim, and or kill another individual.
But we can at least make it more difficult for them to... But, I agree. But you can't prevent it completely, but you can make it more difficult. And the point, actually, all of the guns that were used at Newtown were legally obtained.
And Tom, what were you about to say?
Well, I mean, Jonathan Chait has written very expertly about this in the past. He says, you know, the NRA has this foolproof argument. They say if somebody with a legally registered gun who went through the proper channels killed somebody, they said, see, the law worked and there's nothing you can do it. And then if they get a gun illegally, they say, well, see, the laws are in place and you can get around. If you go around the laws, then the law doesn't help us anyway. So it doesn't matter whether the crimes are committed by people who got their guns lawfully or unlawfully. They've got a foolproof argument that they put up every time. So, look, here's what, you know, I think needs to be done. I support the Second Amendment, and I think people who are use it for shooting, for practice, and for hunting and other recreational purposes, and those are the vast majority of shooters, for the most part, have the number of guns they need and the amount of ammunition, but not much more than they need. The people who are stockpiling weapons, we should be able to check on that. Stockpiling ammunition that's beyond what anybody would possibly reasonably use, especially when it comes to assault weapons, we need to have a flag for that. We would have a flag for that if somebody with a foreign-sounding name and a foreign background who was a non-citizen was doing this kind of behavior. I mean, frankly, this is going to be a sad, sad thing I'm about to say, but let's just put it right out there. Even with 26-year-old white kids dying in a school, it's going to take a raft of terrorists who start on one end of the mall and got a bunch of guys on the other end of the mall who open fire with guns, legal or illegal, to finally get the country to do something about that. That's what it's going to take. And the reason is because we don't really want to do any regulation on this, and we could. Look, people can get in cars and get drunk and kill people whether they have a license or not. Should we not have driver's licenses? Should we not have driver's license exams? Should we not have DWI testing and pull people over? Because you're right. I could let my driver's license expire, get drunk next week, and kill somebody with my car. That doesn't mean we should eliminate all those laws that prevent me from doing that.
But one of the things that Paul said, though, I mean, I think that it was said on the show the other day, as we talked about murders in communities and in cities, and as someone said here, I mean, it is really easy to go out into the streets of Baltimore, almost anywhere else, and buy a gun. I could go out here in a certain neighborhood, almost anywhere, and neighborhoods you didn't think would be those neighborhoods, and buy any pistol I need or think I need. And so, I mean, so the question is, I think that there's a difference between the idea of having legislation that monitors who buys guns, what we sell, and armor-piercing bullets and all the rest. And the idea, part of it we never talk about, though, is the gun manufacturing, the amount of guns in the country, and why we make so many guns, and where they're being sold. And, I mean, that's all part of this. We don't – there is some logic to saying that you can put every gun law you want in the book, and it will not stop somebody, criminals, from buying guns. I mean, there's logic to that. I think you have to address both of them.
Well, sure, but you can make it as hard as possible. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm not. That's all I had to say.
Well, no, I agree. It's like you can't prevent somebody like Bernie Madoff from committing fraud and stealing millions and billions from people, but you can at least have an SEC and other kinds of government agencies that try to make people, you know, be transparent about stock. You know, I mean, no law is perfect. No law is going to prevent every single case, but that's not a reason not to have the laws that try to at least prevent these things.
Corey?
And I guess one of the things, I know that we were staying on a gun subject, and I think it's a great conversation to be having right now, but I know that we talked early in the show, and just wanting to touch on some of the things that I wanted to see in 2013 would be the minimum wage. You know, I think that the minimum wage should be increased in the state of Maryland and in the United States of America. I think it's a conversation that's going to come in 2013 and 14, and hopefully we can have that conversation in the state of Maryland.
Now, that's something that we, after the first year, we are going to pick up. It's going to be a huge discussion on minimum wage. And we'll invite Corey back with folks who don't think minimum wage should be raised and have that debate in the studio, which I think we need to have. Because I think that's going to be one of the things coming before the state legislature. It's going to be debated in state legislatures across the country. I don't believe
it should be here. I think we should have a minimum wage. And death penalty also is going to be a hot discussion this time around as well.
It's going to be. Governor Martin O'Malley is putting everything he can on the table to ensure his run for the presidency.
That's not a death penalty, though. Well, how do you put Benjamin Jealous? How do you put an activist and say, yo, go out there and get the votes that I'm supposed to get you? And once you get the votes lined up, then I'll maybe think about putting my support behind you. Isn't that his job as the governor? I mean, this is your package, not the NAACP's.
Well, no, but he's playing. I think Governor Martin.
Playing for 2016.
He's playing for 2016. Mm-hmm. We don't see.
So he's going to be mad when Hillary takes it, right?
There's one last comment about that, because it's local and not a national thing. But that if the only way the youth jail will not be built in Baltimore City, detention center, is if Governor Martin O'Malley thinks that you follows Governor Cuomo in New York, who is trying to cut down on penal institutions and close them. That's going to become a presidential issue in 2016 in terms of that. Then you won't see the jail bills.
I'm predicting it won't be. There's meetings going on by that. They don't want to put it out there, but the Black Caucus and them are meeting right now to have that eliminated from that discussion. So it may not be built, but you're right.
I'm betting it won't be built. So Hassan Giordano, thank you so much for being here. Mm-hmm. Reporters Roundtable. Tom Schaller, author of the book Whistling Past Dixie, Associate Professor of Political Science at UMBC. Always great to have you with us, Tom. Thank you so much for taking your time.
Okay. Thank you.
Always. Ann McCarthy, now Dean of the Business School at Hamline University in Minneapolis, Minnesota, waiting for her to return to Maryland. Good to have you with us.
Always a pleasure, Mark.
And my friend Corey McRae, co-founder of the Best Democratic Club, one of our rising political stars. Good to have you in the studio as well.
Mark, always honored for the opportunity.
Stay with us. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, well, we're going to be joined by Helicon. This will be the 15th year that they bring their Solstice sounds to the airwaves of the Mark Steiner Show. So don't go away.